This is Wyman and Bob
on Seattle Sports, powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
Welcome back to Wyman and Bob. Dave Wyman, Mike Lefko, Brady Robick on the board. And yeah, we got to recap this this game. We want to get this one behind us, Mike. The one yesterday, well, the entire weekend really, was really depressing a little bit. You know, outscored 30-9. And that's kind of who we thought this Texas Ranger offense was all about. And I don't know, what you had was some young guys going against some really established veterans. And, you know, you've got an incredibly explosive Texas offense right now. Their average, .278, is number one Major League Baseball. Their on-base percentage is number one at .345. Slugging percentage, they slipped a little bit there. They're number two to Tampa Bay, .461, and then .821 OPS. They're number one. So you pair that up with you're going against a, you know, young pitching staff. And then Seattle's offense, fourth, fifth worst in almost every one of those categories I just mentioned. So the whole thing pretty much added up to disaster over the weekend.
And the big issue, and it kind of just hits you in the face, was the fact that it's almost a direct contrast of the off seasons and what the Rangers did compared to what the Mariners did. And you saw it overwhelmingly work out in favor of the Rangers. And for all the offensive questions that have plagued the Mariners this season, for the lineup concerns, for everything that was a fear going into the year about, well, if these things don't go right, it might not be an improvement. At least in this microcosm of this weekend, everything that those fears played out, the Rangers showed the opposite of, well, if you do all of that, if you spend this much, if you bring in these high-priced free agents, you get a good pitcher to complement it with Nathan Eovaldi, who, by the way, they brought in this past offseason to supplement Semien and Seager, and you complement all of that with a pretty good farm system, who now Josh Young's coming up to fruition, Jonah Heim is coming to fruition there. That looks like a very balanced team, and it's just almost, you can't help but stare and stare at the grass that's greener. If you're like, if you're envious of someone else's lawn, Dave, if you are sitting out there staring at the Mariners groundskeepers or the Seahawks groundskeepers like you do with envy about their lawn and how good it looks, this was the Mariners over the weekend staring at the Rangers and saying, wow, all that looks really nice. And look how great an offense can be when you get that production. You know, 1 through 6 were just so dangerous bats in the Rangers lineup this entire weekend. So you see what happens when things are clicking. And it almost kind of doubles down on the fact that, all right, well, the Mariners have been able to overcome a lot of these lineup concerns because of their pitching. But when they can't, it looks like this.
Well, Mike, I would further the analogy by, you know, when I look at my neighbors, their yards, they have theirs professionally done. I do mine. Mine's grown from within. My farm system, Mike, that's my farm system with my mower. I upgraded to an electric mower or battery powered. And, you know, I fertilize the whole thing. So that's kind of the Mariners aren't going outside. They're not hiring a professional landscaper. They're building it from within.
Not a riding mower.
No.
Electric motor.
No. It's battery powered.
Okay.
Yeah. Pretty awesome.
Not gas.
Pretty slick.
Gas.
No more gas. No more gas.
That's what I had to do growing up.
Yeah. I do kind of miss the smell of burning gas, you know, when I mow my lawn. But no, to your point, I mean, you're right. That's what they did. But they did it both ways. It took them, you know, a year because last year they were supposed to be this team, right? They get, was it Seager, Semien?
They got both last 2 years ago, two off seasons ago. Yeah.
Seager and
Semien.
And Semien. Okay. Yeah. And Semien didn't have a great year last year, but, and he was the year before where? Toronto?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he had kind of had a little bit of a breakout with the A's and then got paid decently with the Blue Jays. Then boom, Texas just spent big to get him. And
right.
It's been good. I mean, he has the best offensive WAR in any player in baseball right now. And he's on a 23-game hit streak.
Yeah.
So that looks good, but you're right. Like it takes some time to get that, but you can see what happens when you do commit to that way. And in terms of, there's no correct way to build a team if your style works. And you can build a team from within. The Mariners system of, you know, draft, develop, and trade works for teams, but there's also the spending money on free agents, and that works as well. And for the Rangers, right now, that's working. And that is coming to fruition for everything that they have built and spent. And that's working better than the Mariners system right now. So in this direct head-to-head series of, all right, well, yeah, we kind of thought these teams were close based on the start of May when the Rangers came in here and there were three very close games. That whole series could have been the same. And now it looks like a big gap.
That's what makes it, I think, so hard for Mariner fans to handle right now. You get outscored 30-9. They lost the first series with them, right?
Yeah, they did.
As well.
Yep.
So, and then, you know, I've been talking about, well, you build within this, your farm system, everything. But they've done both, right? They kind of did it both ways. They've, as you mentioned, developed, you know, Garcia, you know, some of those, the young players, and then they brought in the expensive, the free agents. So,
yeah. They might have the rookie of the year candidate, the top rookie of the year candidate in Josh Young, their third baseman, who honestly, because of what he's doing to essentially lead all American League third basemen, he might be your starter at third in the All-Star game, and he's a rookie.
Yeah.
So they've done that, and that's kind of stabilized the big spending as well. So it's not just that they've spent big. They do have some sustainability behind that, and their top prospect, Evan Carter, is still close to debuting as well. Their number one prospect in their system, he's an outfielder, supposed to arrive at the big leagues maybe end of this year, next year. So it's not to say that if you do it one way, you can't do it the other. It looks like you need a mix of both, and the Rangers showed that because, well, they scored 30 runs, and the Mariners did not score 30 runs.
Well, and look, they're not the only ones that have been, you know, fallen victim to the offense of the Texas Rangers. Saw a stat this morning that we talked about in the first hour. So in the through the first 58 games of the season, where I don't know where they get these numbers from. Who's our guy with the Mariners that gets all these oddly specific things?
Alex Mayer.
Yeah. He I don't know if he's like feeding those to MLB Network or whatever.
Should we should name him that. Oddly specific Alex Mayer.
Yeah. Because 58 games through the first 58 games of the season, most games with 10 plus runs scored through 58 games of the season. So the 2023 Rangers, 16 games with 10 plus runs. And then tying them was the 1936 Yankees, 16 games with 10 plus runs. And then it goes to 2000 Rockies. They're 15th, so they're second. They have 15 games, which you can understand. Lots of offense up in the thin air. And then the 99 Mariners, how about that? They showed up on there with 10-plus runs scored. And then you go back to the 1901 Cardinals. So, I mean, this is like a
historically good, yeah,
offense right now that they're dealing with. So, again, they're not the only ones, but because they've done it 15 other times. But, man, this is it is really, I think, particularly discouraging that, number one, you got, you know, a couple of young guys. I was really expecting Bryce Miller, and probably shouldn't have expected it. I should have been hoping that he would bounce back from his last outing because he was so good in the beginning. And, you know, everybody's going to get the book on him and what, you know, what he can throw, and they got scouting reports and things like that. And, you know, it just didn't work out for him at all. And then, you know, Brian Wu, you pretty much expected that. I mean, guy gets called up from Double A Arkansas. You know, he's, you know, you're just thinking, hey, we just want him to eat up a few innings so we don't kill our bullpen. And it didn't work out for him either. So that's the thing I think that's been. And then you lose the game where you start Luis Castillo.
Yeah, I was going to say, we didn't even really talk about that because it was the Friday game. But
yeah,
he, in hindsight, looking at what the Rangers did the next two games, he was even more impressive than just the numbers show out there, the seven innings and the one run given up, which then, you know, turned into the loss because it was a shutout. But seven innings, five hits, and just a run allowed, that looks very good compared to what you saw the rest of the weekend. So Luis Castillo, if you want to take a positive out of this weekend, Luis Castillo looks like he is back, or he is what the Mariners got last year in the second half of the season, where, yeah, we had heard that he's a slow starter, but the Mariners didn't see that because they got him in the second half of the season. Encountered a little bit of that kind of his last few starts after he came off he had a brilliant start to begin the year. That opening day start is still going to go down as one of the most fun moments of the season so far. And then his perfect inning start to five and two thirds, or he was into the six perfect against the Rockies, the 1-0 win for the Mariners there. And then a start like this. So Luis Castillo looks like he's back, but then the glaring lineup issue jumps out at you because you get three hits in that game and get shut out.
Well, let's hear from Scott Servais. You know, as I mentioned, I think he's got the perfect temperament for, number one, a sport that plays 162 games, but also one that has, and particularly for the Mariners, a lot of young players.
We're not playing, you know, winning baseball against top flight teams. They are a top flight team based on the start they're off to this year, and you have to give them credit. Again, it's one of the best offenses we've seen all year. So a ton of credit there. And on the flip side, you know, we didn't pitch our best or play our best in this series. So it's really a combination of both.
Well, it's not like there were errors all over the field or anything like that. I mean, it wasn't anything ridiculous. They didn't hit. And they didn't pitch. They did catch and throw somewhat, but was it Teoscar that got robbed?
Mike Ford.
Oh, it was Mike Ford. That's right. Yeah. So yeah, I think it was their center fielder.
And that guy was a Mariner for all of 8 days last year. But yeah,
really,
just
I don't remember
show.
That.
Like everything just spiraling. It all kind of went wrong. If there was like insult to injury, if you could just kind of jam the knife and twist it even deeper, mm-hmm. it was probably that. Travis Jankowski, who was on the Mariners for all of 9 days, playing center field, robs a home run when the Mariners are struggling to score in that game. And then you're seeing Corey Seager just mash the ball yesterday. So that seemed like the final just cap of a weekend where you brush it aside, you have this off day. I mean, this will help. I think this stretch of these uncharacteristic, three off days in about 10 days.
Yeah, nice.
That can help. I mean, that can really let a team reset. You just play two games against the Padres, who are also, well, they're maybe more of a disaster right now. The Mariners aren't a disaster. They're just in a big slump. The Padres might be a disaster. They're 27-32. They had even more expectations than the Mariners, and they can't hit. They have all this star power. They have the second worst batting average in baseball. So if you come in there and get right against the Padres, that could bode well. But I kind of want to play this because I know we've played it a few times, but it adds to the relevance each time based on these series where John Morosi told you guys on Thursday about the Rangers series and then that carryover into this week and the rest of the month.
But to have these two teams against each other, the Rangers and the Mariner pitching against the Rangers bats, I think is one of the best strength versus strength matchups that we've got in our sport right now. And it's the kind of a series that can really stamp you as a legitimate contender. If the Mariners go in there and win this series, find a way to take two out of three, I think it will send the entire month of June on the right trajectory. But to your point, too, Dave, if it doesn't go their way, then you start to wonder a bit, and then you look ahead and say, okay, is this the week when San Diego gets well against us? And that could be a potential trap series. So I think we're going to know a lot about the Mariners when this three-city trip is done here.
Speaking of JP, did you say the thing? It was Jonah Heim that his father was an instructor at Top Gun? Nathaniel Lowe.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he teased ahead that he's going to get what his call sign was, whatever his dad's call sign is. But he's got a brother that plays for Tampa Bay.
He's going to go see it because they play. At the end of this week or something like that.
So, but pretty amazing family, right? Dad teaches flight school at Top Gun, and then got two kids that are Major League Baseball players. But he said, he's going to go get his call sign, like, you know, Maverick or Goose or whatever. Yeah, so anyway, tune in to Major League or MLB Central, I guess it's on, that JP will, and he's coming on this week, right? We got him on Thursday.
Yes, Thursday.
Yeah. Yeah. So
he can tell that story.
Yeah,
to us.
Yeah. Yeah. But pretty amazing, and he does such a great job. JP does. But before we move on to the Seahawks, I feel like this is I feel like if Bob was here, Bob kind of to me represents sort of what, like, he's the voice of the fans. You know, like he thinks that they should have spent more money, which a lot of people I think that. You know, and I think the fact that Texas, you know, both developed, you know, from their farm system and went and spent some money, that makes it a particularly hard, you know, series to swallow, because that's kind of what, you know, Bob and the people that, you know, like that are really good, you know, true Mariner fans felt like they should have done during the offseason.
Right. And to wrap this up real quick, what this series loss does, and what Morosi was saying too, is that now it really leaves you no margin for error, because you went into the Texas series thinking, okay, yeah, if you get two, you're very competitive there. You have reestablished yourself as a team that can make some noise in the division in the wild card race. Well, you got swept in that series. You were thoroughly outplayed. So there is no margins for error now on the rest of this road trip with the two against the Padres, the three against the Angels, and each subsequent series looms larger and larger because the Angels are right there in the mix in that wild card race. They've already beaten you in a series. The Padres are going to throw some good pitching out there. They have Musgrove and Michael Wacha. So you can't just say, well, we're facing good pitching here. We're facing good pitching here. We're also facing good pitching here. You're going to see good pitching pretty much every series from here on out because of this balanced schedule. So you lose a series like this to Texas, you got to start finding ways to win a series that maybe would be, quote, a tough one, because at some point you're going to have to stack those wins.
You know, what's disgusting to me is that the best matchup that we'll see is Castillo against Otani on Friday, June 9th, and it's on Apple TV.
Oh, that's a perfect Bugging Dave on Friday. That'll be the perfect lead-in to that game where we can complain about it on Friday.
Yeah. All right. So in the meantime, we can talk about expectations for minicamp. Mike, you and I are going out there tomorrow, and we're going to do the show from out there. I guess you and I will sit out there and watch practice. And have you been out there in that situation where we can go wander, as you like to say, around and watch practice?
I did wander around at an OTA last week. It all blends together. The Monday you weren't here, but I don't know the sense of how much different that is from minicamp. So, yeah, what's different for you, minicamp, compared to OTAs, and what are we going to wander and kind of see when we get there?
Well, what are they're putting on pads, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, there's a lot that you see there, and especially for offensive and defensive line. And for, you know, up until now, we've been watching what they do with the bags and things like that. And you get an idea of like a guy's body position and how he leans and, you know, how quick his hands are and movements and things like that. But you can't really see, it's hard to get like the proper fits and everything. And so I wonder if they're going to wear that. Remember those big helmet things?
I think so.
Yeah. So I don't know if they're still going to wear those, because I still think that screws up your spacing, because it's like 2 inches thick on each side. And like
he's kind of wobbling around.
Yeah. And you're trying to put your head where it's, you know, like in the crook of his neck or whatever. And I don't know if that throws it off or not. But anyway, those are the kinds of things that you can see. The other thing is sometimes pads slow guys down a little bit. And, you know, I talk about field speed and everything. And, you know, some guys play really well. They just play like they're not wearing, you know, the pads that they are. But and then there are guys that slow down a little bit. So, you know, we'll see things like that. But there was a lot to like, especially with the corner play. And that's something we're going to, I think that's going to be interesting to watch. The defensive backs, they improved drastically. I mean, they went from 31st in pass yardage for 2 years in a row to what, number 14 or 15. So that was a huge improvement. Now you go draft Devin Witherspoon. You got a guy like Michael Jackson who probably is not going to start, and he's going to end up, you know, he could start on probably at least half of the teams in the NFL. So, yeah, those are the kinds of things I'm going to be looking for. But I'm sure you're going to want to look at the rookies, right?
Yeah, I was going to say, so what maybe position group are you out of all these rookies, depending on the position that they play, and I know you're kind of mentioning how things change speed-wise and drill-wise, what group do you think it's the most different for from like, all right, you're running around out there, OTAs, so maybe is it the line where like, all right, now the offensive linemen, we'll see how they have to block. The defensive linemen, we'll see how they use these moves or what moves they have to get around the O-line.
Right.
Is that kind of where you learn the most from OTAs to minicamp?
Yes. Yeah, definitely at that position. And then it even picks up even more when you start to get into like the scrimmage part of it. And then, you know, they have live scrimmages. It's just funny that, you know, when I played, it was just full speed pretty much all the time. Yeah. And now there was one thing. There's no tackling to the ground. They called that thud tempo. So, you know, full contact on the guard or whoever's blocking you. And if you're a guard blocking a linebacker, full on. I don't think we cut back then, you know, cut a guy's legs out. We didn't do that. But there was, you know, you'd go up and wrap the guy up, which always led to a lot of frustration, because there was always that hero running back that, like, you know that we can't tackle you to the ground, yet you're going to, you know, chop your legs and try to bust through my tackle, and that's going to piss me off. So next time I'm going to throw you on the ground. And then there were fights and things like that. So
is that what you're looking forward to the most, the fights? Dave's sitting here like, I can't wait till we see some fights out there tomorrow.
I don't mind seeing it. I have to say, like, I always, like Cody Barton, for example, I always thought Cody was just the nicest guy in the world. And I saw him one time be really really kind of a jerk.
Oh.
Yeah, and I was like, oh, I like that. He's got a little nasty in him. So, yeah, if you see that from, you know, from some of the rookies or somebody that, you know, you want to see that from, he's feisty, you know, then, yeah, that's fine. But what you can't have is somebody breaking their hand on someone's helmet because they punch him. So, yeah. Also, you know, there was one year where they got some, I think they had a fine and had some days taken away because it was too physical out there. So they kind of have to watch out for that too. But yeah, we're going to see full pad speeds. I'm sorry, full speed pads. And it's going to be, you're going to be able to sort of tell, you know, a lot more. It's going to become more clear who can and who cannot play.
Why do you think people punch a helmet?
Because you're so angry, you don't really care.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what people always say. And I've heard people say, oh, yeah, why would you do that? That's so dumb. Well, intelligence has nothing to do with it. It's just pure emotion, you know. But I did see a guy one time, Marcus Cotton. He grabbed the guy's face mask, pulled it forward, and then hit him with
that
an uppercut. That seems
smarter. Yeah.
Yeah. But you're not always in the position to do that. Hmm. So that you're trying
it's
to do
it's
that.
Just blind rage, right?
Absolutely.
You're just, yeah. I'm going to punch this guy. Oh, he has a helmet on.
Yeah.
Well,
don't
what
care.
Coach was it? Didn't we see a coach that went up and this is a few years ago? He headbutted a guy wearing a helmet, right? Remember that? Ah, oh, I got to look that up. There was a coach that literally grabbed a player and headbutted him, and the coach is not wearing a helmet. The player is. And then the coach starts bleeding.
Oh, man.
That's... I'm going to look up who this is.
Okay.
During the break.
Yeah. We will find that's a heck of a tease right there. But, anyway,
got you off track with that one.
Coming up next, though. Yeah, I like that. Mike, you're talking about blood, man. That's awesome. How do the Mariners' young pitchers bounce back from a tough weekend? We're going to break that down next. This is Seattle Sports on 710 and the Seattle Sports app.
Wyman and Bob.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
On Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app.
You watching Ted Lasso?
It's over, yeah. You need to catch up.
I hear it's the last year.
Yeah, it's done.
No
it's
more.
It's completely done.
Done. Why? Mm-hmm. Why would they do that? It's such a good series.
Yeah, it runs its course.
This is Wyman and Bob, by the way. Mike Lefko, Dave Wyman. Yeah, I loved that. I thought that series was really well done. Apparently, Scott Service, it was his birthday. Yesterday, right?
Yeah.
June 4th, and somebody, I heard, they said on the broadcast anyway, that they had a picture, a cake, and it had a picture, the head was Scott Service, and the body was Ted Lasso. Or maybe it was the other way around.
Wait.
Yeah. I'm not sure. Anyway.
What would the body of Scott Service look like? Just a Mariners jersey?
Well, he's got a Mariners jersey.
What would the
on.
Body of Ted Lasso look like? Just the logo, yeah, the AFC
whistle,
Richmond logo?
Maybe the okay. whistle around his neck.
See, that makes more sense.
That could be.
The
that
Service
be.
Face, the body of Ted Lasso.
We'll get that cleared up. Maybe if anybody was laying around watching the Mariner game like me, text it in to Mac and Jack's text line, 866-979-3776. Which one was it? But anyway, yeah, that's a good series. Well done.
That's a cake, you said? It's a weird
yeah,
cake.
Yeah, they had
to
a birthday cake for him. Huh. Yeah, and it was, you know, like, I don't know, something like that must run you. It was down in Texas, so they did it on the road. Must have found a place down there. That's pretty cool. It seems like a team that has a really good time. Like, they really know how to keep it light. And thankfully, because the Mariners are right now, it's not great. Last year, what did I say? They were 25-30 last year at this time. Now they're one game under 500. So, but, you know, you do have good young pitchers. And I was telling you this, Mike, that I heard on MLB Central, and it was just people making predictions and things. And one of the predictions, and it wasn't even our guy JP, I can't remember who the analyst was, but he said, you know, pitching, you know, the late in the season, it favors good pitching. And the Mariners have good young pitchers. So I think the biggest question mark right now is how are these young pitchers going to bounce back from just getting shelled like they did with Bryce Miller, his last two outings, 7+ earned runs. And then, you know, Brian Wu, and we don't know what's going to happen with him going forward. Depends on, you know, how quickly they get Marco Gonzalez back out there. And then, yeah, I mean, everybody's kind of had their turn at getting shelled. So just, you know, the big question mark there. And I said this before, I think that Scott Service is one of the better managers as far as taking care of the young guys. He's, you know, he's a little bit old school, but he's mostly kind of, you know, we had him in here when he talked to Bob and I, and he said, look, you know, if it's something about numbers, there needs to be a blend of, you know, sort of the new age stuff with the stats and everything, but then also kind of a feel thing with a certain, you've got to be a psychiatrist, right? To understand how to get the best out of these players, because that's really what your job is. And that's what Pete does. Pete Carroll gets the best. He finds the way to get the best out of each player individually. And there's all kinds of different ways to do it. There's all different kinds of players and, you know, different personalities and things like that. And just being able to get that part right, that's the best thing that Scott Servais can do right now.
Yeah, well, you have Logan Gilbert, too, who's coming off a tough outing. And the last time he had an outing like this, he did bounce back in fine form. He had a tough outing earlier in the year against the Guardians, came back against the Cubs and did well. So that'll be a big question for tomorrow, because he's more of that veteran at this point with how young this rotation is. Yeah. I mean, Luis Castillo and Marco Gonzalez are older, but in terms of a guy who's been with this team, now Logan Gilbert going on his third season with the Mariners. So you almost elevate him to veteran status with this young pitching core. And he got kind of, you know, touched up against the Yankees, the 7 hits and the 7 runs, just 5 of them earned. But that bounce back will also be important for setting the tone against the Padres team that has been prone to not hitting well. So you have two guys out there who should inspire a lot of confidence in Logan Gilbert and George Kirby, especially with what George Kirby did. I think if there are any questions about George Kirby's pitching ability, he answered that in resounding fashion against the Yankees, because he had his worst start of the year against the Pirates. He came back, locked it down against the Yankees. Well, now Bryce Miller, we've seen two tough starts from him. That was the question originally. How would he respond after his first tough start? Mm-hmm. Hasn't bounced back yet. At some point, we think he will. So we'll see that. We'll see the kind of acclimation and adjustment process to teams now understanding his fastball a little bit better, to that rest that Ryan Rollinsmith talked about with us, you know, getting used to maybe pitching on shorter rest than he's used to. So as Bryce Miller evens out, don't know when that will be, who it will come against, I think you'll see that steadying and the reason why the Mariners should be still competitive in all these series. I mean, at this point, based on the offense, if you just looked at the offense, Dave, you might think they're one of the worst teams in baseball. That's where those numbers are. It's they true. Have numbers around the Royals and the A's. Right. They're two strike hitting. So a huge difference in this game, or in this series, the two strike and two out hitting, and the Mariners, their strikeout rate with two outs is the third worst in baseball. Only the A's and Royals are worse, and the Rangers, conversely,
you're talking about
are the
offense,
best.
Offensively.
Yeah. Yeah. So the Mariners, you know, the strikeout numbers are up there without the pitching. And you just looked at the lineup, the Mariners might be at that 10 games under 500. So the pitching will keep them in it. I don't think that's going to taper off, even though we've seen tough outings from Bryce Miller, from Logan Gilbert recently. That pitching will be there the whole year, like it was last year. Now it's on the offense, and that's what we've talked about. The great question coming out of this weekend is, what do we see out of the offense?
Yeah, well, and I think it's a good question to ask about, you know, especially when you're talking about younger players. I mean, I was just looking at Bryce Miller. What was it? It was the previous five, his first five starts. He only gave up 13 hits. The last two, he gave up 20. Mm. So, I mean, that's, and you're right. I mean, and that's the reason why they're only, what, one game below 500?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, any other team, and they're probably, yeah, probably 10 games below 500. So, yeah, their pitching has, that's one way to look at it. But, you know, you just worry about, are these the right guys? You know, is Bryce Miller going to be like a Logan Gilbert type? Is George Kirby for real? Which sometimes with him, it's hard to be confident just because his numbers are so good. I mean, he just doesn't walk anybody. So, but you mentioned, you know, we've been talking about Texas and their offense. They're number one in pretty much every major category. The Mariners, if you go look at those same categories, which is batting average, on-base percentage, slugging percentage, OPS, they're fourth or fifth worst in Major League Baseball. So, yeah, that's definitely the part that, yeah, I think you're right. Their pitching is, even though it's not been good recently, it's keeping them alive.
I think the off days will help, too. The kind of what we mentioned about, not just the two coming up this week, which is kind of a rarity to have two after having one last Thursday, but then you get another one after, well, in between the homestand, which is also unusual, that you come home, you play three games against the Marlins, get an off day before the White Sox, and then another off day before going on the road to take on the Yankees. So you can reset, calibrate before that six-game road trip against the Yankees and Orioles. You have six off days this month. That doesn't happen in baseball. So six off days over the course of June. Rest up, get in a better headspace, and we'll see what comes of it. But this is a good day to have a day off. I asked Shannon Dreher that on the post game yesterday because they were traveling to San Diego. She called in for the segment, and I said, you know, Shannon, sometimes if you get your teeth kicked in, you want to get back out there, right? Like you want to just wash away the frustration. You want to flush it, as they say, and get back out there as soon as possible. And we were talking. She said, well, no, this is probably good just to decompress, reset, and come in relaxed and ready to kind of attack a new series. So the off days will help.
I hope they spent their off day in San Diego and not in Texas.
Oh, no, they flew right to San Diego. Yeah.
Perfect. There we go.
After that series, you got to get out of Texas as soon as possible.
Yeah. All right, well, coming up next, which under-the-radar Seahawk are you looking forward to seeing the most? We'll share our thoughts on that. This is Seattle Sports on 710 and seattlesports.com.
Wyman and Bob.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
On Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app.
Welcome back to Wyman and Bob. It's Mike Lefko. I almost said Bob Stoughton. Oh. Mike Lefko and Dave Wyman.
He's not here all week, Bob. Or Dave.
All week.
I just said Bob.
Now you just called me Bob. Yeah. All right, we're even now. All right, so question being, and you can text in to the Mac and Jacks text line, 866-979-3776. What's your vote? Who's the underdog or under-the-radar Seahawk that you're rooting for this summer? And, you know, I said something about Tyreek Smith last year, and I guess I should get, like, two this year because Tyreek Smith would still be my guy because I never even saw him on the field, and I'm including the rookie camp that they had. So I don't know. I can't remember if, or maybe they're not, you know, they didn't divulge this, but he might have been hurt when he got here. I don't know. But I remember we talked to him, and he's a great kid. And, you know, he's just got a real interesting, like, I thought of all of the pass rushers that I looked at last year, he was the one that had the widest array of as moves. You know, whether it's a rip move, a rip, and then a spin, or a rip and a swim, and all. I mean, he just had a whole repertoire of, and that's really what you're doing on the edge. I mean, you're doing all kinds of different things to those offensive tackles. You know, you try the rip. I used to teach D-line. I coached D-line for a year. I loved it. But, you know, we'd do like a rip, and if that doesn't move, then you grab and, you know, swim, and just all these different things that you can do, not only with your lower body, but your upper body. And I just thought he had a really wide array of great pass rush moves. So I went with Tyreek Smith. I could say, yeah, I didn't really get a chance to see him because we never even saw him on the field. But how about we'll keep it to the rookies. Who's your underdog pick of?
So you're cheating because you get two.
Yeah, yeah.
You're just
I'm
kinda,
not cheating.
You're spreading your bets across more.
I didn't get what I paid for last year. So I'm getting it now.
Okay. Like, so it just gets the carryover. All right.
Yeah, I get the carryover. There you go.
Doesn't always happen, but in our game here, sure, that works.
But here, you know who I'm going to go with, though? And this maybe is not like an under-the-radar guy because although he was drafted, what, in the fourth or fifth round, and that's Oluwatimi. Mm-hmm. The center from Michigan. And the reason why I bring that up is, you know, I texted Brady Henderson and he had an amazing stat. Although, and I don't know if you were listening when Bob and I were talking about this last time, but, or maybe you were eating your gummies.
Yeah, that probably
your Lunchable
was
gummies.
By the way, that's how we started the show.
But you know what's weird is that the most starting centers since 2013 is the category. Most starting centers, the Dolphins have had 15. Since 2013, they've had 15 different starting centers. And then it goes Giants, 14, Chargers, 12. And the Seahawks are like third or fourth on the list, 11. So apparently it's really hard to find good centers that start for you for a long period of time. Max Unger, who was a second-round pick, I think in 2010, he was here for, I guess, 2 or 3 years, but he continued to play in New Orleans. But the Seahawks have had, like I said, 11, including Justin Britt, Ethan Posick, Max Unger, Austin Blythe last year, Patrick Lewis, Joey Hunt, who's in camp and fighting for the job, Drew Nowak, Lemuel Jean-Pierre, Stephen Schilling, and Damian Lewis. So, and Damian, I think, only played one game, maybe, his rookie year. So it's, I think it's tailor-made for Oluf to, you know, be the guy to jump in there and be the center for like the next 6, 7, 8 years or however long until you sign a free agent contract somewhere else.
And Dave, if you want to do the radio math, that boils down to more than one a year over the course of this last decade. So on average, that's more than one a year for the Seahawks. And you're right, to have continuity at that position would be huge. Like that would be an incredible thing to have as you try to anchor this offensive line with the two tackles who you hope will be those long-term mainstays at left and right tackle and Charles Cross and Abe Lucas. Are you you just kind of pushing to the side Jarek Reed? Are these two more important? Because I know you you really liked him, just his demeanor and everything, but is it just because position-wise, there's probably not really a path for him, you know, in that crowded secondary?
Yeah. I mean, I think Jarek Reed's going to make the team, and I think he's going to be one of those guys that's, again, a Dylan Moore type player. Just, I mean, you can put him on every special team. It's something like at New Mexico, and I think he played somewhere before that. Was he a transfer guy? Maybe not. Anyway, he had something like 800 special team snaps in college. So he's tailor-made for that. I mean, he's going to be on every single, well, probably not kickoff, or I'm sorry, field goal. You know, he probably won't fit in there. But, I mean, that guy's going to be run down on kicks, and he should be, yeah, he's a good one. But like you said, there's not a position for safety. Although Moyer told us he thinks that he can play inside, so he could be a nickel type of corner. So maybe give Kobe a little bit of Kobe Bryant a little bit of a run for his money there.
Okay. Yeah, and I know you guys have talked about that's becoming almost more important than the linebacker position in terms of how these coverages are and how defenses are played, that you're kind of seeing an evaporation of those linebackers, and you don't necessarily need to line up the two or three linebackers back there. And J.V. Long, right? He said it as well. He goes, you know, with how modern NFL is and how the way the game's evolved and continues to change, offense is maybe more important than a traditional linebacker. So maybe there's a path for Jarek Reed to get some snaps. Because of that and because of the lack of positional depth, I'm going with Cam Young.
Yeah.
Because this is a guy that feels like a big question mark and one thing that they didn't address at least early on in the draft. Nose tackle, that interior line spot where you need to shore up what you lost in Al Woods, and Brian Monet still hurts, still trying to recover from that injury. And because the run was such an issue last year for the interior of that defense, Cam Young, it feels like he's the guy that a lot is banking on, that he steps up, wins the job, and almost does what those offensive tackles did last year, comes in, or Tariq Woolen, and comes in and is a rookie that is impactful right away.
That'd be awesome. You know, and I always favor the interior defensive linemen to start early because there's just not a lot of assignment. Okay, your head's not going to be clouded up with, you know, what do you do if it's this formation and drop into this zone or whatever? You're just going, man. You just need. And the other thing about, I'll say about your pick, Mike, is that when, and I promised Schneider I wouldn't say this because he said, well, then the other guys would get their feelings hurt. But he has a little hammer rating. Like, this guy's a hammer. Every one of them's a hammer. Some guys were like two hammers. Cameron Young was three hammers. He said, that dude is a tough guy.
So you just said it even though you promised you wouldn't say it. Okay. We better stop talking then.
Yeah, nobody's listening anyway. All right. Well, coming up next, we're going to catch up with our guy, Ryan Roland Smith, for his thoughts on the Mariners over the weekend. This is Seattle Sports on 710 and the Seattle Sports app.